Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
We could be going back to Grange Hill. It was announced last week that Phil Redmond's classic British school drama might be on its way to the big screen. The beloved BBC series. It kicked off in 1978. It ran for 30 years, though it's been off our screens for more than a decade. Redmond believes the time is right to check back in on the folks at Grange Hill Comprehensive. But where does Grange Hill rank in the pantheon of screen school dramas? And is there such a thing as the definitive school film or TV show? Well, arts journalist Chris Wasser is with me now to take a look at some of the other famous screen schools that have captured the hearts and minds of audiences over the years. We're talking TV shows, by the way, and movies that are either about school or are based in schools, and Grange Hill is coming back, so I better say hello. Chris, how you doing? Are you all right?
Dave, I'm very well. How are you?
Good man. I'm going to play you this here now just to sort of evoke some memories. By the way, I have to say I was alive and well when these things were happening. I never saw Grange Hill once in my entire life. Sorry.
So okay, right.
You're going to have to fill me in. Oh, I know that music. Yeah. So I presume the people in Grange Hill are well known to a lot of people who might be listening right now, 51552, and if that's the case, can't be the same people, can I? Could they be 40 years older or something?
No.
Tell me about Grange Hill.
That's kind of the funny thing, Dave, because like Grange Hill, it kind of did pass me by as well, but it was always on and it was always somewhere in the background. But the unusual thing about it is Grange Hill for me might mean a very different thing to what Grange Hill meant for someone who came of age in the early 70s or, you know, in the early 80s or the early 90s. I was born in 88. The active series had been on 10 years at that stage, but it still all kept it, you know, it always had a similar sort of, it always followed a similar sort of path, which was that it you know, it set out to tell the story of the lives of the kids at Grange Hill Comprehensive. And it always, you know, like it always had like, you know, hard hitting, you know, quote unquote controversial storylines that it tackled, you know. So the characters weren't just, you know, going to school, getting into trouble, doing the homework and then doing it the next day. It was always like themes of addiction or abuse, homelessness, sexual assault, HIV and AIDS, teen pregnancy. I mean, you name it, Grange Hill tackled it. But it got to a stage then in 2008 where the series, it sort of ran its course. I mean, Redmond had said, you know, that it covered everything. It wasn't really the Grange Hill that it used to be, because there was sort of a pushback by the BBC to make the series, you know, more accessible and more suitable for viewers under the age of 12. So you couldn't be, you know, tackling those hard-hitting storylines anymore. So it wrapped up. That was the end of it. But even before it was cancelled, Phil Redmond, who also, by the way, gave us Brookside and is also the creator of Hollyoaks, he said that he wanted to make a film about, you know, the actual school, and the storyline would evolve, you know, the school being shut down, being demolished, something else would be put in its place, and it would, you know, quote, replenish local coffers. And, you know, there would be this big push by the students and by the parents to, you know, save Grange Hill. And that's exactly what he appears to be getting. He was actually talking to The Guardian last week about how, you know, casting will soon begin on this Grange Hill movie about the school being knocked down.
Yeah, wasn't there another programme, which I also didn't see, but I remember, was it Biker Grove?
Yeah. Yeah, are you more familiar with Biker Grove?
No, I've never seen it. I don't know anything about that either.
Well, that's where Ant and Dec came from, Dave.
Oh, right. That's one of the reasons why I might know it. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I think it's kind of funny because I read an article about Biker Grove late last year in The Guardian about how it ended. And when I think of Biker Grove, I think of, you know, technically it's not, it wasn't set in the school. You know, Grange Hill was all about the school. You very rarely saw the school that the kids went to in Biker Grove. It was actually about the youth club that they attended.
All right.
But it's still played by the same rules. You know, it was another coming-of-age drama. You know, the kids were going through things like, you know, the addiction problems, teen pregnancy again. You know, it tackled some very serious storylines. I remember Biker Grove for the series in which Ant or Dec was blinded, but after a round of paintball. I don't remember it. I must have checked out long before this. I discovered just last year how Biker Grove ended. And apparently after 13 years, the writers, who were a little bit miffed about the fact that it was coming to an end, they decided to construct this meta finale in which all of the characters in Biker Grove realize that they're fictional characters in a television show.
What?
That's how Biker Grove ended.
It's like Neil Young. You've got one more album to deliver, so he releases an album of noise. There's your bloody album, and then he goes off to a different record label. That's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. Did anybody ever see that? I wonder. See the actual program where the characters found out after 13 years that they're actually in a fictional TV series.
I mean, it's completely bonkers. I mean, and it's a great attitude to have, you know. Oh, we're not happy with our show coming to an end, right? We're going to do
go all Twilight Zone on you. Okay, so if you weren't watching Grange Hill, then which school TV show had you hooked on to basically when you're growing up? So that's my question of 51552. Tell me about Saved by the Bell.
Oh, I loved it. Were you a fan?
I don't even know what it is.
Oh my God!
I'll tell you what, but I might. Hold on, I'll give you a blast. Let's see. No, it means nothing to me.
Dear Mr. Vernon, we accept the fact that we had to sacrifice a whole Saturday in detention for whatever.
Wait a minute, that sounds Breakfast Club, all right?
That's
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I knew we were going to go to that. Okay, so anyway, I don't know anything about it. Tell me about Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, we seem to have mixed up our American high school.
Here, I'll give you a blast. Look here.
Yo, last night at the movies, you went too far. Just helped a mother get together with her son. What's so wrong about that?
Wrecking my date with Joanna wasn't funny.
Oh, like it was funny wrecking my study date the night before?
Hey, you started it, man, making me look like a jerk at the Max.
Well, that's what you are.
What did you say?
You heard me. Get out of my face.
And what if I don't, punk?
Then I'll just have to make you, punk.
That's a fight between Zach and Slater from Saved by the Bell. Is that like in a canteen with everybody going, ooh, or is that in the classroom, or is there a live audience there?
It was actually shot in front of a live audience. Oh. Yeah, that was kind of part of its appeal, that, you know, the way it was performed, it was always quite stagey and melodramatic, but you got the idea that, you know, the performers are actually trying to please the live audience as much as they were the viewers. And, you know, again, like, this actually started in 1989, but thank goodness for, you know, endless repeats, you know, on the children's channel when I was growing up, because that's where I got hooked on Saved by the Bell. And although, you know, it's, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was a bit late to the party, and it is difficult to relate to an environment that, you know, none of us in Dublin can relate to. You're talking about this idealistic version of high school life in Los Angeles. But at the same time, Saved by the Bell, it might have been fluffier and a bit, you know, it was four kids, it was very, very American, but it still followed that same, you know, same set of rules. It had something to say about growing up, about learning what, you know, the big bad world is like. And, you know, it also, you know, it didn't shy away from, you know, hard-hitting storylines. I mean, at one stage it did have its big drug episode. One of the characters, Elizabeth Berkeley's Jessie Spano, she starts taking caffeine pills because she's under a lot of pressure, you know, studying for her exams. She gets hooked on them, so, you know, it had something to say there. Another got done for drunk driving. You know, people in this show sometimes died. It shone a light on homelessness and broken families. I think actually probably the most far-fetched thing about this show was the fact that the students were friends with their principal, Mr. Belding. You know, I don't think that ever happens in real life.
Sorry, wait a second. His name is Mr. Belding, thus the
Mr.
title.
Mr. Belding. That's not, it has nothing to do with the title, but it's a fabulous pun. Dennis Haskins played the principal. But I think one of the best things about it was that the performers really did seem to be having a tremendous amount of fun with the storylines. And there was all these really fun storylines too, where, you know, the guys actually started a band together, or they would go away on holidays. Mark Paul Gosselaar played Zach Morris, Tiffany Thiessen played Kelly Kapowski. They've all gone on to try and do different things in their career. They've had varying levels of success, but they will always be remembered for Saved by the Bell. And the show actually was rebooted last year for a very woke, very modern, contemporary version of it, where, you know, their kids are actually going to Bayside High School, and actually the original performers star in the show themselves. I don't think I have any interest in going back to Bayside, but I must admit, if repeats were on the television right now, I would watch them.
Right, of course you would, yeah, because that's how you started with them. Okay, so we looked at Grange Hill, we looked at Biker Grove, kind of, and we looked at Saved by the Bell. Can we go big screen for a second here? We're talking Chris Wasser about schools on screen, and I did kind of play a little bit of Don't You Forget About Me, which was the number one that Simple Minds got in America because of this, I suppose. And tell me about Breakfast Club and why it was, now this is one I have seen, why was it so, like, not an awful lot goes on in Breakfast Club, does it?
No, not a lot. And you mentioned Simple Minds there, didn't they, at one stage they didn't want to record that song?
Well, I think it was offered to about five different, including Brian Ferry, by the way, and they said, okay, we'll do it, because we normally write our own stuff, but we'll take it. And while Live Aid was happening in America, they were number one with this track anyway.
I think they knocked it out actually in 3 hours in one Saturday afternoon, something like that. But you're right, not much actually happens in the Breakfast Club, but it's still probably the best film that we'll discuss here. You know, and it's all about the performances, and it's more of a character driven ensemble piece. And, you know, it's you do have the brain, the beauty, the jock, the rebel, the recluse. They're bearing their souls to one another. They've never met before. They were all given detention at, you know, Sherma High School in 1984. And it's actually one of the only films or TV shows that we'll discuss here where all of the everything takes place inside the school.
Yeah.
All of the action takes place inside the library. They just sit around. They're trying to figure out, you know, who they are, who everyone else is. They're given this essay to write by their principal. They don't really do it. At one stage, they end up, you know, smoking marijuana together. It's just about these five people from very different walks of life who are all the same age, who are bound by their time in the school, getting to know each other in a setting which they might never have been
okay,
before.
Well, I want to move on to another movie now, which I think is actually one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's fantastic. And this is School of Rock.
Math is a wonderful thing. Math is a really cool thing. So get off your act, let's do some math. Math, 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 math. 3 minus 4 is...
-1.
That's right. And 6 times a billion is...
6 billion?
Nailed it. And 54 is a 45 more than what is the answer, Marta?
9.
No, it's 8.
No, it's 9.
Yes, oh I was God. Testing you. It's... 9, and that's a magic number.
What an ending. Ned Schneebly, or whatever name he stole, fantastic movie. Jack Black, I think Jack Black was, look, I want you to do something here, and it's this. Okay, and he just made it up on the spot half the time, I think. Amazing. Anyway, tell me what you think, A School of Rock.
I love it. I adore this film. And I think it's so I what I believe happened here was maybe Richard Linklater. And this is actually probably one of the few films that Richard Linklater has directed, which he didn't write. Richard Linklater, obviously being the filmmaker who gave us Dazed and Confused and the Before films. But I'd like to think he sat Jack Black in a room, Dave, and said, you know what you did in High Fidelity?
Yeah, you're on your own there, Jack.
Yeah. Can you give us maybe a PG version of that?
Yeah.
Because he does have that same vitality, energy, excitement in that role as he did in High Fidelity. And I think one of the reasons this film works so well is because most of the kids who feature, they are musicians first and actors second. So when it comes to, you know, pretending to teach them how to play and getting them together and forming a band, you're watching real musicians come together and play. I mean, one of the things that annoys me, Dave, when you're watching a film about music, you know, maybe it's a famous biopic or something, is you're looking at actors and going, they're not really playing guitar, and it's annoying me how they're holding themselves. No, the kids could play, they could actually perform, the songs are great. And here's something that I just learned last year. The guy who wrote this film, Mike Weiss, who actually stars as the real Ned Schneebly he's the man who gave us The White Lotus last year.
Oh yeah, I saw The White Lotus. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So
fabulous film. Probably one of the best on the list here.
Oh, yeah. School of Rock. Okay, let's try and beat it. What about Mean Girls?
Love it. Yeah. I think, you know, look, it's kind of... You know, a lot's been said about it. What can we say, but that hasn't already been said before? I think it works very well as a satire because it is actually based on a nonfiction bestseller called Queen Bees and Wannabes, which was actually written as a sort of a jokey manual for parents to kind of understand what their kids were going through in high school at the time. And I think when Tina Fey was writing the screenplay, she thought, okay, this has to be, you know, give, you know, viewers an idea of what the contemporary American high school is like, but it also has to be very funny. And I think Lindsay Lohan was just at the peak of her career, before it all went sideways, was just at the absolute peak of her power. And she's brilliant as this girl whose parents have homeschooled her because she's been traveling the world with them her whole life until she's 16 when they settle down and she actually has to go to a proper public American high school. And she figures out, you know, straight away what it's like to navigate the social hierarchy there. And she realizes that there's cliques everywhere, that, you know, the bullies rule the roost, and also that one bad decision in the fashion or, you know, in your personality, whatever it is, one bad decision can have like this lifelong impact.
Yeah, and this was before social media. Here, I'll give you a blast of the rules in Mean Girls.
Having lunch with the Plastics was like leaving the actual world and entering Girl World. And Girl World had a lot of rules.
You can't wear a tank top 2 days in a row, and you can only wear your hair in a ponytail once a week. So I guess you pick today. Oh, and we only wear jeans or track pants on Fridays. Now, if you break any of these rules, you can't sit with us at lunch. Well, I mean, not just you, like, any of us. Okay, like if I was wearing jeans today, I would be sitting over there with the art freaks. Oh, and we always vote before we ask someone to eat lunch with us because you have to be considerate of the rest of the group. Well, I mean, you wouldn't buy a skirt without asking your friends first if it looks good on you.
I wouldn't. Right.
And you know, when you think of Mean Girls, there's also Heathers around the same time with Winona Ryder. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Heathers actually came a good few years beforehand, but it had maybe a bit more of an edge that Mean Girls didn't, because you know the storyline does involve Christian Slater's bad boy character convincing
the
main
bullies.
Character convincing us that the popular bullies should actually be murdered. These are all you could actually put this in the same kind of vein as although they're different films, as Mean Girls, as 10 Things I Hate About You, just a slew of very smart whip smart, funny and also kind of inventive teen comedies that are all set in high schools and that all do things that maybe international audiences can relate to, but still all the characters are going through the same things as other teenagers at the same time. They're just trying to figure out who they are and what they're about.
10 Things I Hate About You, and then if you come up to date, you got Olivia Wilde's Booksmart, which I thought was very good, but not necessarily as good as everybody was telling me how good it was, but it's good though.
I loved it. I think it's one of the reasons as well why I'm interested to see what Olivia Wilde does next with them. The Harry Styles movie she's working on, Don't Worry Darling, with Florence Pugh. I actually thought it was quite underappreciated. I mean, it didn't really make all that much money at the box office, but it did appear in a lot of top 10 lists at the end of 2019. And just the storyline of two studious high school seniors realizing that they haven't had an ounce of fun over their 4 years in high school, and they tried to do everything that they missed out on in a single night of the eve of graduation. It's just a great idea.
And the main one is the one who plays Monica Lewinsky in the TV thing, Beanie Feldstein. Anyway, let's go on to the next thing here, which is Irish entries. What have you got for that?
We have Sing Street. Did you like Sing Street?
I did. I thought it was very good. Yeah, and I see, I do have the Drive It Like You Stole It bit, which was like, it was so brilliantly staged, that whole song. It just took, it looked like it was a kind of a really expensive Janet Jackson video or something, that part of it.
That's the thing, yeah. And I remember talking to you at the time of its release, actually, about how, the songs in this film and the way they come together, you're thinking to yourself, there's no way that that the people around this band wouldn't have gone, hey, listen, they need to be signed. These are just kids, but the songs they're coming out with are just fabulous. But the best thing about it, and I think the reason it gets away with the fact that the band is so good and they're doing the things that they're doing for the age that they are, is because it's kind of a fantasy. And that's, and I don't want to spoil the ending for anyone who hasn't seen it, but the ending did kind of, it raised a few eyebrows. But again, it fits into the fantasy mold that this kid in 1980s Dublin, his whole life has kind of been turned upside down by the fact that his parents are getting a divorce and they're broke. And he has to go from his private school setting to a public school. He ends up in, Dublin 8 at Sing Street CBS, which is where I went, and it's no picnic. Connor is his name. He's played by Fairdy Walsh Pilo. In order to survive this carnage, in order to survive this complete turmoil in his life, he starts a band. And it turns out to be the best thing for him because, he makes friends. He realizes that he's actually a very talented musician. And I think more than any other film about starting a band, John Carney's Sing Street, it actually really does genuinely capture the magic and wonder of what it's like to go, I'm not going to do my homework
really
today.
I'm not so sure about the last 2 minutes of the movie on the boat. But also around the same time, and maybe a bit later, was Handsome Devil. That was John Butler's movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was lovely. I think it's probably the best thing John Butler's done. Fiona O'Shea was brilliant in it too. He plays this, he's a bit of a loner teenager. He's kind of doing his best not to fit in after he is sent by his parents to, study and live in a rugby-obsessed boarding school. But it's actually about the friendship that he forms with the rugby player who he's boarding with, Connor, played by Nicholas Galitzine. And, it does explore, things like, their friendship, first love, self-discovery. It's all about the lads learning about their sexuality, and it does effectively use this troubling school system. It shines a light on the fact that here's this boarding school full of young men, and they're all being taught the wrong lessons about what it's like to be a young man. It uses that as a springboard for a very relatable story, I thought, and also it's another another film that gives us a great Andrew Scott performance, which is never a bad
thing. Yeah, indeed. That's Handsome Devil. Let's round things out with a few more TV shows that I most likely haven't seen. There's loads, isn't there? Like, what about Beverly Hills 90210?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of up there, I would say, but very different, but kind of up there in terms of, giving us this, look at privileged, sun-drenched lives of wealthy students in a place that none of us here in Ireland can relate to. But it does, it's the cast as well, especially in the original 90210, Luke Perry and all the rest of the lads, like they were probably far too old to be playing high school students, but it worked. We still have, there's still some very popular school shows on the box. We have Ackley Bridge. I don't know if you've seen this.
It's
the one
never
with it's a Channel 4 series, Dave, and I think you can get the first season on Netflix.
Great. Yeah, I'll tell you, there is one that I knew nothing about, and I felt I had to, because it was like there's full courses and semesters on it in colleges around the place, and I had to interview Sarah Michelle Gellar once. I had to kind of read up on it. But I don't know anything about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's a school thing too, isn't it?
Yeah, you need to fix that, Dave. Yeah, it is a fabulous show. Yeah, I think, right, Buffy the Vampire Slayer actually ran for seven years. I think it should have ended after the third, because in the third season finale was when the gang all graduated high school. And that is where it worked best, because, yes, it was about a vampire slayer. Yes, it, you know, there were a lot of, you know, action scenes in graveyards, a lot of storylines about the end of the world.
The main person in it, or the main thing in it, was the school.
That's the thing. I mean, it was, it always worked best as a, here's a bunch of, you know, teenagers in high school, and here's a bunch of monsters, which we'll use as metaphors for how bad high school is. And the high school itself was very much a character, because, you know, the library sat on the mouth of hell. That's where they all convened to, you know, hatch their big plans to kind of save the world. And in the season finale of the third season, the kids literally blew up their high school to get rid of all of the monsters inside. And I think that would have been a fabulous end to the show. So it always worked better when it was in secondary school.
Okay, just finally then, Sex Education, is it good?
It's brilliant, yep. It is definitely not something you should watch with your parents, or it's definitely not something you should watch with your kids, but it is actually, it's very funny. It's quite lovely. The premise, which is that, you know, the son of a sex therapist actually sets up his own sex clinic at a school. Asa Butterfield plays the teenage young flat, and Gillian Anderson plays his mum. It is about so much more than that. And it's one of those series that somehow manages to say, here's a couple of dozen characters, and you're thinking to yourself that there's far too much going on here. But it's the balancing act it displays is just brilliant. It somehow manages to, you know, give time to every single character.
All right.
And I think it is a bit of a fantasy, but it's probably the best show on television at the moment that somehow captures how awkward it is to be a teenager.
And are we
in
talking a couple of seasons here? Are we in season whatever?
We are currently in the third season, and season four has been given the green
light. I'm going to give you a tiny bit of this from Sex Education. It's where Otis and Eric fight. It'll mean a lot to you.
I'm sorry, dude. This thing came up with Maeve in the clinic.
You are what so happened? Self-centered. You don't care about anyone but yourself.
What? That's not fair. Eric, why are you so angry?
Because we've been friends since we were 9 years old, and you've abandoned me for someone that you've known for 5 seconds. You've changed, man. The old Otis would never do that.
I rang your mum to pick me up because this is where I felt safe. I think I made a mistake.
Okay, that's Sex Education, where Otis and Eric fight, as I say. So finally, Chris, just one or two bits and pieces. There's The Age of 17, which I did see and thought was pretty good, actually. I liked it. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. Loved it. I thought Hayley Steinfeld was brilliant in it. And
Woody
Harrison's on
that. Yeah.
I mean, Dave, how cool would school have been if we all had an English teacher like Woody Harrelson?
Yeah, exactly. Dressed in hemp, smoking dope. Okay, what about Gregory's Girl? That was a great school movie.
Yeah, Gregory Girls, yes, it is a great school movie. Maybe not the sequel. I've never even seen the full thing, the sequel, that is. But Gregory's Girl, yeah, it still works. Directed by Bill Forsyth. Great coming-of-age romantic comedy about an awkward teenager trying to win the heart of, you know, the school football team's newest striker. John Gordon Sinclair plays the, you know...
He's hilarious in it.
He's the centre forward. They put him in goal, which is the worst thing for a striker to be told. And Dee Hepburn was obviously the new striker on the team. And just in terms of another film about teaching, given the week that's in it, To Sir With Love.
Oh, Sidney Poitier,
He played an engineer who turns his hand to teaching in London's East End, based on an autobiographical novel. It also spawned a late in the day sequel. Have you ever seen To Sir With Love 2?
To Sir With Love 2, I have not. I've seen To Sir With Love, all right. Yeah. I just want to mention one last one here, though, which is finally, it's Robin Williams often can be really over the top and a bit annoying, but in Dead Poets Society, spot on, yeah?
Spot on, yeah. And I love the story as well that, like, you know, Ethan Hawke and Robin Williams, whenever they were doing scenes together, you know, Ethan Hawke always thought he was kind of, you know, he was nervous around Robin Williams, and he always thought that Robin Williams was going a bit too far because he, you know, Ethan Hawke wanted to be this serious theater and screen actor, and he thought Robin Williams is maybe a bit of a joker. But he only realized later on how brilliant Robin Williams' performance was, because I think he won the Oscar for Good Will Hunting. You know, he did try his hand at some serious stuff every now and then.
Yeah.
But this was Robin Williams.
Yeah, I'm going to play the famous bit. But just before I do, can I just say congratulations? By the way, it's Chris Wasser we're talking to here. And in The Independent today on page, I don't know what it is, it's in the review section. You're talking TV as you usually do, Chris. And you're talking about what do you call it? Afterlife.
Afterlife,
which is Afterlife Season 3, which I've seen as well. And I'd be a major fan of Ricky Gervais. Anything, The Office just does it, and Extras was good too. And I know he's tripped up sometimes. And I really, really loved Afterlife Season 1. Thought Season 2 was dodgy beyond extreme. But I thought Season 3, and I'm going to quote you at the end, what you say here. You said, save for a handful of genuinely affecting moments in its unsteady and largely unfunny finale, however, this final season plays out like a cruel, mean-spirited and annoyingly feckless pastiche of itself. Couldn't have put it better myself. Couldn't agree with you more. I think it's terrible.
Nice one, Dave. Yeah, it is. And do you know what? I'm the same as yourself. I thought the first season was great. Second, I thought, oh, we're in trouble here. Yeah. There was no need for
if
a third
If you're
going
to be really crude, you've got to be really funny. And
That's it.
Yeah, he shouldn't have gone with the third series. Anyway, listen, good man yourself, Chris. Chris Wasser it is. Thanks a million. Here's Dead Poets Society. And you know what I'm going to play. That's right. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Captain, my Captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson. You hear me? Sit down. Sit down! This is your final warning, Anderson. How dare you? You hear me?
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Mr. Overstreet, I warn you. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down, all of you. I want you seated. Sit down. Leave, Mr. Keating.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.